The Teaching Saints Virtual Summit was an incredible success. We had thousands of individuals tune in from around the world to hear from people like Brad Wilcox, Hank Smith, Casey Griffiths, Marie Eckersley, Jason Hewlett, Jeff Burke, and more as they taught us about how to better stimulate classroom discussion, create effective classroom environments, best practices with object lessons, and so much more. If you missed the summit, be sure to visit leadinglds.org/teach to watch the three most viewed sessions from the online conference. It will not only change you, but it will change those you teach. Check out the Teaching Saints Virtual Summit today. Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org. Meetings, meetings, meetings. There's a lot of meetings in our in the world, really, but especially in our culture of the LDS Church. When we're serving in leadership positions, obviously you have ward council, bishopric meetings, presidency meetings, training meetings, leadership meetings, stake meetings, right? Lots of meetings. And sometimes we never take the time to really step back and say, the handbook says I'm supposed to have this meeting, but am I holding it? Am I running the meeting effectively? Is it running in a way that people actually enjoy coming to my meetings? And we're all leaving with better ideas, better action plans, and are those action plans actually being carried out after the meeting? And so I was encouraged when I listened to a podcast called Productivityist, which is fantastic. I recommend it to anybody who's looking to be more productive in life. And they had a guest on that podcast. Her name was Mamie Canfor Stewart, and she's written a book called Momentum, Creating Effective, Engaging, and Enjoyable Meetings. And she runs a company called Meteor, where she consults with businesses all over the world about holding better meetings. And so I thought, well, she's probably not LDS, but I've got to get her on the Leading LDS podcast because we definitely have meetings that could be better. And it turned out to be a fantastic episode, which I think you will enjoy. And I encourage you to check out her book, Momentum. I think it'd be well worth any board council reading, maybe together, taking a chapter each week and figuring out how you can improve your meeting. Here's my interview with Mamie Canfor Stewart. Today, we're headed across the country to Brooklyn, New York, to talk with Mamie Canfor Stewart. How are you, Mamie?
I am great. How are you, Kurt?
Very good. I appreciate you being on the Leading LDS podcast. Now, you're sort of a unique guest because typically the type of person we have on here has an LDS or Mormon background, but I'm not that I asked beforehand, but do you have any connection or background in the LDS or Mormon faith?
Not exactly. I had a good friend in college who I unfortunately have lost touch with since then, who was Mormon and went on a mission pre-college and shared her experience with me. But other than that, this is kind of my first real introduction.
Nice. Now, and this is my opportunity to apologize for any weird or awkward interaction you've had with a Mormon. But are there any weird interactions you've had?
No, but I'm Jewish. And so I've had lots of weird interactions with Jews. So I totally can relate to what you're talking about.
Good. Yes. You have your own culture there that has its own quirks, I would imagine.
Exactly.
So. Cool. Well, great. Now, you recently released a book and also run a company. Your company is called Meteor. And the book you released is Momentum, Creating Effective, Engaging, and Enjoyable Meetings. I would imagine, did the company come before the book?
It did. Well, actually, I was counseled against writing a book at first. So the company definitely came first and the book came second.
Oh, wow. Okay. And what's Meteor about?
With Meteor, we help individuals and teams thrive at work. So our whole focus is on collaboration, and we have a special emphasis on meetings. And we provide trainings, coachings, workshops, consulting, different kinds of support to help individuals and teams collectively thrive. And again, really a focus on meetings, because when you look at kind of how people spend their work, especially how they spend their time together, most of it happens in meetings.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it seems like, I don't know, is this a new idea, or are there many consulting companies out there that focus on meetings?
There are not a lot. There are a few kind of like us where we have a strong emphasis on meetings. But for most consulting firms, and I've spoken to many, meetings are like an unfortunate kind of reality of work, but they're not something that consultants actually help you improve on. They want big projects like strategic planning and you know, cost reduction or, you know, big HR transformation efforts. And somehow meetings don't ever fit into any of those things, even though they should.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like to me, it would be, it's an obvious thing that needs to be addressed, but I would guess that executive teams and companies, that's not the first thing that they're, when they're looking for problems in their organization, they don't just default to, well, it's our meetings, of course. So does it take a lot of convincing on your end to say, well, actually, if you can fix meeting, a lot of the other problems go away?
It takes a lot of convincing. It's really hard because there's not a direct kind of return on investment. So if you improve your meetings, you're probably not going to see a direct correlation to your bottom line, which is what most, you know, high-end senior top people are looking at. How is this going to affect my bottom line? You're also probably not going to see a direct correlation in kind of other things that you might be measuring, like your employee engagement. It might take time to get there, but eventually you'll see it. But a lot of companies still aren't even measuring how engaged are their employees, what's their retention rates. Meetings are play a part in all of those, but people aren't, they're not looking at them on a regular basis to be able to see a return on their investment in improving their meetings.
Yeah. And I remember right out of college, I had a job and it seemed like my boss, he couldn't think or make any decisions without a bunch of other people in the room with him. And so he would, you know, call these meetings and I just feel like we would be like reading his email together or reviewing different projects and things that I didn't really see why we needed to be there. But I think that I've heard, you know, the old tactic of counting up everybody in the room and then, you know, whatever you're paying them and times that by the number of people in the room. And that's how much that meeting's costing you, right? But it's hard to feel. I would imagine companies, it takes a while for them to realize the expense that meetings are taking a toll on their bottom line.
Exactly. And if you aren't having those meetings, you're still paying those people. So that's where the tension kind of comes in, because you can't pay people less just because you have fewer meetings. They're redeploying that time, which hopefully will lead to more results, more sales, more impact, more whatever it is that you're trying to get done. But it's not as clear, like you can't just draw that fine line that says, yep, we had 25% less meetings and therefore we produced X number of increased of whatever the things are that we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So just to give you some context as we dive into this discussion, because it seems like in the Mormon world, the Mormon culture, their meetings are definitely a thing. And if you're not familiar, the LDS Church is run on a lay ministry. So for example, when I was called as a bishop, you know, to preside over this congregation or parish, which we call a ward of about 400 to 500 people, I was a 28-year-old college graduate. I had a marketing degree, had no MBA, no past experience that would, you know, that anybody would guess I'd be a good leader. Nor would I say I was a good leader, but and across the church, you get, you know, a church of almost 16 million people. We have 25,000 of these wards or branches across the world. And, you know, it may be a plumber that's the bishop or a kindergarten teacher, which is the head of the Relief Society, which is the female leader of the ward. And or you may have a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, you know, that's running it. And so you just get this diversity of background and skill in these leadership roles. And we are required to have meetings like it's called a ward council, where all the leaders in that ward, there's maybe 10 of them, 10 to 15 of them, meet together maybe every other week and have this meeting. And then the bishopric meets with him and his counselors, which is about 3 or 4 people on a weekly basis. And I've been in some bishoprics that our meetings started at 7 in the evening and go till midnight. And I mean, aww, just these long meetings of just going over every little thing. And it is what it is. And so my hope here is having this interview, we can address some of these issues that pop up in Mormondom, because, you know, God bless them. These are just leaders that have been asked to serve, you know, that you don't apply for these positions, nor do you want to apply for these positions, but that you're called in and asked to serve. And typically for a bishop, it's 5 to 6 years. I served just under 5 years as a bishop. Wow. And trying to execute these roles. And so just give you a little context as we approach this, those are the type of meetings we're having of trying to make decisions. And of course, we believe in, you know, divine revelation, inspiration that come out of these meetings as we counsel together and make decisions. But nonetheless, it can get to a point it's just like, you know what, this meeting is a waste of my time. And everybody's a volunteer. So, you know, it's not like you get what you get, and it's all within a geographical area that we can pick these people. So anyways, I'm fire hosing you with this context, but nonetheless, that's what we're looking at. So as you approach different companies, what are the typical issues you find with meetings that we would probably all recognize?
Well, I really want to answer that. But before I say this, I want to be clear that nobody is trained in meetings. So
Okay.
This idea that, oh, if you're a manager in a company and you went to business school, that somehow you learned all the secrets of good meetings, that's just a myth. I went to business school and I went to a good one, and I never learned how to run a meeting. And the managers that I've worked with in other companies, even people who are really effective at meeting practices, and I ask them, where did you learn these? They all have two answers. Either it was totally intuitive to them and it's just how they run their whole life. They figure out systems, they figure out practices, and they implement them. Or they are the kind of person that learns really well from other people or studying topics. And so they had a great boss who ran good meetings and they just picked it up and became part of the way that they did it. Or they kind of lucked into reading a book on meetings because they are the kind of person that loves productivity and they, you know, learned it from there. But very, very, very few people actually have an experience where they learn how to run a good meeting and then are able to use that in their life.
So, I'm glad you mentioned that. You're making me feel a little bit better. So that's good.
Yes. Okay. So now on to some of the common meeting challenges. Yes. That's what we were talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Let's hear it. What do you see most that just makes you cringe?
So the number one biggest kind of cringeworthy thing is meetings that don't have a clear purpose. And I hear this all the time from people when I ask them, you know, tell me about your meetings. They're like, oh my gosh, I sat in this meeting the other day and I just really didn't even understand why we were there. That is by far the number one biggest challenge. And it's not a hard problem to fix, but it's really prevalent. And it can come either from the, I don't know why we're having this meeting, or I don't know why I'm in this meeting. And those are two different problems that sometimes get conflated. But if nobody knows what the meeting is about or kind of the purpose of the meeting, that's a really big problem that can be easily fixed. If you're not sure why you're in this meeting, that's still a big problem. It's a little harder to fix because there's some interpersonal dynamics that might get in the way, which I've seen, but there, that's another really common one.
Gotcha. So no clear purpose. And these, I would guess, would come up often. You know, you have the weekly, you know, Monday morning meeting, right? That let's just regroup as we start this week. And so it just turns into this bland, like, routine that people show up to just because we always do.
Exactly. This is the team stand up or the kind of weekly team check-in. Those are the most common ones that are kind of, why are we having this meeting? Like, all we're doing is going over what happened last week. Like, this could have been an email. I had one client that was telling us how, well, she was kind of like, I don't know why we have these meetings. Like, we just kind of go around and talk about stuff that's going on, but we don't make any decisions. And like, we're not really brainstorming to solve problems together. It's just kind of like reporting. And I coached her to go and talk to her manager and say, you know, what do you hope is going to come out of these meetings? And what they discovered was that what the manager really wants is for the team members who primarily actually work alone on their individual projects to have time together to build relationships. And so she and I had another conversation. I said, that's a wonderful reason to have a meeting. But the way that he's running the meeting is not the way to get to that outcome. So how can you guys restructure the meeting so that it's time that actually does build relationships and makes the people who are there feel like they're part of a team and not sitting there resenting each other because they're like, oh, I have to hear that report again on this project that has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. And so how, as far as like creating a purpose in that meeting, because what you just described there, I think relates to many of the ward council meetings that we have in our church experiences, you know, where it is a routine meeting. It's something that we're encouraged to have at least once a month, but typically at least twice a month. And some I know have it every week, you know, on a Sunday morning or before or after church. And it becomes so routine that it's just sort of like, it's easy to default to the round robin of going around and say, oh, okay, how's it going in your department and your auxiliary? Oh, great. All right, next. How's it going there? And so in order to create a clear purpose, what guidance could you give us as far as doing that?
Yeah. So the first thing is to create a desired outcome. And this is what we call, instead of calling it a purpose can be misstated sometimes because it leads you to say the purpose of this meeting is to do some activity, right? To brainstorm ideas or to discuss what's going on or to report on X, Y, or Z. And a desired outcome, that just that choice of language by calling something an outcome of the meeting, it's much harder to say the outcome of the meeting is to discuss this. Like that just sounds really weird. You would never say that.
Yeah.
So the first step is to frame in your head when you're planning your meeting, I want the outcome of this meeting to be, and now you have to say a noun. So it could be a list of ideas, which you'll get to by brainstorming, or it could be a decision, or it could be stronger relationships, or a myriad of other things, a plan for XYZ event. But by starting with the words desired outcome instead of purpose, it helps you reframe what it is the meeting is trying to achieve. So that's step one.
Okay. And so let me just to clarify on that. So we're given the encouragement. So for our ward council meetings, the purpose of those meetings, what's been the big mistake and tradition that's happened in those meetings is we would talk about like the upcoming neighborhood barbecue or church social that's coming up. And all right, do we have people? Who's going to set up the tables? Okay, we got that. And who's going to do this, right? And then we've gotten clear direction from the general authorities of our church to know that we need to focus on talking about people and people in need and that need help and how we can help them. And so what I hear you saying is that, you know, you should say, I want the outcome to be, and then a noun like people, right? Like, I want this outcome to be about how we can help people. Am I on the right track?
Let me rephrase. So you might have a meeting. It sounds like your meetings are quite long. And so you might have almost like a series of mini meetings in one single meeting. So let's say the first hour of your meeting is going to be talking about the barbecue. So if I were running the meeting, I would want to have a checklist of questions that we need to answer for the barbecue prep. So how many people are we expecting? Who's bringing in who's going to set up the table and chairs, or at least who's managing the volunteers for that? Who's responsible for food, right? What are all those things? Sure. Now, if I were going to take a step back for a second, I'd say those are not questions that need to be answered in a meeting. And that would have been done better through like a Google spreadsheet. But for the sake of today, let's just assume that your practice is to have a meeting where you're actually discussing who's going to take on what responsibilities and not just assigning them through a spreadsheet.
Okay. And I would say that the general guidance would be that we do not want to have these meetings about the picnic or anything, that should be done outside of ward council. Does that make sense?
Yes. All right. Okay. So let's just go with this example for the time being, because I think it'll actually be illuminating. Cool. So then I would say the outcome of that conversation would be clarity and agreement on all of the details and preparation for the barbecue. So that everybody around the room, you would kind of assess at the end of your conversation, do we have clarity in all the details? And are we all aligned and agreeing on how this is going to move forward? So it could be something different, right? Let's say you want to talk about the people aspect of a community event, right? Mm-hmm. Then you might say the outcome is a plan for how we are going to engage community members as volunteers and participants in the event. That might be more of a strategic conversation you're going to have. But at the end of that conversation, you'd say, okay, do we have a plan for how we're going to engage community members? And if the answer is no, because we just talked about a lot of ideas, but we didn't actually agree on anything or assign any next steps to anyone, then I'd say, no, we don't have a plan. So our conversation did not lead to the outcome that we intended.
Right. So there should be some action items part of this plan.
Action items or decisions. It depends on what your outcome is.
Okay. But stating that in the first, as far as what the purpose of that meeting is with that, you know, I want the outcome to be fill in the blank.
Exactly. And again, you might have a series of those stacked up into one single meeting, because if you're talking about different topics, each topic could have its own outcome. So I can use an example. I sit on the board of my children's school, and we have board meetings, and there's usually four or five different topics. There's usually a fundraising topic, and there's usually something about this space because we're a growing school and we need to take on some new space. There's usually something on staffing, some of the other kind of strategic questions that we have going on. And for each of those, there's an outcome statement. So at the end of the fundraising, it's the outcome statement is something like, all of the board members are clear about the current financial situation of the school and understand their role in helping us get to the next milestone. And then the next section on the space is all the board members understand the space situation, which is usually kind of how they all go, is we just need to have understanding. And then sometimes something else like, and there are next steps that board members have volunteered for. You know, sometimes we need things like people to go and look at the potential spaces or to meet with a potential landlord or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How much would you say as far as like creating a clear purpose, is it how important is having an agenda written out and in front of everybody?
It's very helpful to have a written agenda in terms of keeping you on track. If you don't have anything written down in front of you, you miss out on the opportunity to get those visual cues to check yourself. And one of the challenges of meetings is they go off topic. They wander around. People kind of get into the weeds on things that don't really need to be discussed at that time. And when you have something in front of you, whether it's a physical piece of paper written down, or if you have something projected on the wall, or even if you just write your agenda on a flip chart and stick it on the wall or on a whiteboard, it gives you a chance to every once in a while when your eyes glance at it to trigger and say, oh, are we still on topic? Is this conversation relevant? Is this moving us towards the outcome that we want? And the more detail you have in your agenda, the easier it is to kind of answer those questions quickly in your mind.
Gotcha. And so it may be helpful as far as creating a purpose, but it's really helpful to keep everybody on track.
Exactly. So the purpose should come first, or your outcome should come first, and then the agenda should be built from that. So if your purpose or your outcome of this section is to have clarity and alignment on X, Y, or Z, then the question becomes, how are we going to get there? How much time do we need to get to that outcome? What's the structure we're going to follow? So is there something that I need to share first so everybody has understanding of kind of the context? Is there some strategic questions we're going to ask and discuss? Is there going to be a brainstorming session where we kind of sit quietly for a minute and write ideas down? What's the actual decision that we're going to make? So I have the question written out. How are we going to make that decision? Are we going to vote? Is it going to be kind of majority rules? Is it going to be I make the decision with consulting and input from the others? So the more you detail that out ahead of time, the more helpful your conversation will be as the meeting leader. But you can't really fill all those things in effectively if you don't know what the outcome is that you're trying to achieve.
Gotcha. And so an agenda helps in all those areas.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. All right. I feel like I'm pulling you in different directions. As far as going back to the big mistake of not having a clear purpose, were there additional kind of subtopics there?
Oh, yes. And I kind of touched on these before. So around your outcome, the other thing you want to do is when you start the meeting or you start the section, state what the outcome is. And especially if you don't have a meeting agenda in front of everybody, if you as the leader just have one print out for yourself, which is totally fine. You don't need to waste the paper of giving it to everybody unless people want it or unless that's a practice that you have that you find to be helpful. It's okay if it's just for yourself. But you want to say what the outcome is when you're starting, because everybody needs to have the same expectations for the conversation. It's really frustrating when I think that we're trying to make a decision and you think that we're just generating ideas. And if we only generate ideas, I walk out feeling really frustrated that we didn't make a decision. And if we go straight to jumping into a decision, I feel like we didn't give it time to really brainstorm and sit with stuff. So you want the group to feel similarly about the outcome, or kind of understand this is what we're going to do. So state it at the beginning of that section. And then at the end of the section, check in with everybody, and especially with yourself. Did we accomplish this? That's one of the easiest ways to assess the successfulness or the productivity of your meeting. Did we accomplish the outcome we set out to achieve? And if not, let's figure out why we can't get there or why we missed out. Are we missing an important person who needs to be in this conversation or to make a decision? Did we let the conversation wander too far and we just lost time? We ran out of time. Is there information we need? I have one client who was sharing how at the end of their meeting, they were still unable to make a decision. And so she asked the group, what other information do we need to be able to make this decision? Because they just kept circling around and just not able to make the decision. And one of the people identified some information. He's like, well, if we surveyed our customers and, you know, X percent said this, then I would feel, you know, comfortable moving forward. So I think we need to get that information from our customers. Hmm. And the group kind of looked at him and said, I would bet money, like lots of money, that we're going to get that exact answer.
Yeah.
Like it would be really hard for me to imagine that our customers would not agree with the statement you just said. And everyone kind of looked around and said, well, if that's the only thing that's holding us back, we should just make this decision now and not waste the time or the goodwill with our customers to reach out and bother them by asking them this really ridiculous question. Hmm. So when you kind of have to articulate out what is it that's missing, that's keeping us from moving forward, it can help you to actually make the steps. And even if they had decided they did need to run a survey, at least they knew now what they needed to get done in order to make that decision and not just be stuck in the circling weeds.
Yeah. And so if at the beginning of the meeting, you make the statement of, you know, this is a decision meeting. At the end of this, we're going to make a decision. We're not just gathering ideas. We're getting towards the decision. And if you're not there yet, you can kind of step back and say, wow, you know, if the meeting's going on and on, it's not that we just haven't talked about it long enough. It may just mean we need more information.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. What else with, as far as not having a clear purpose, any other tips there to establish a clear purpose?
Well, there are six different kinds of meeting types that we talk about in our book, Momentum. And let's see if I can remember them off the top of my head. I do this a lot, but sometimes I miss one. So the first obviously is to make a decision. The second is to create a plan, to do some sort of planning, could be strategic planning or project planning. The third is to generate ideas or kind of generate lists of some sort. The fourth is to align. So this is where you get kind of everybody on the same page, which is different than sharing information. So we can come back to this, but aligning people's understanding is a little different than just making sure people are informed about something. Hmm. So the fourth one is alignment. The fifth one is to connect. So building relationships and connecting with people. And the sixth one is to produce. And so this is what you might call like a workshopping session or kind of a working session where you've got some material that you're actually working on real time so that at the end of the meeting, you've got a new version or you've got kind of a finished product.
Gotcha. And so it sounds like if somebody isn't, you know, if they're not sure, they're going into a meeting and they're like, we need a clear purpose. I'm not sure what it is. This at least gives them something to look at and say, okay, is this, you know, what is it? Is which one of the six is it? Rather than just sort of thinking up their own, another just an arbitrary purpose to the meeting.
Exactly. And we have an article that we wrote about this. So I don't know if you link things up in the show notes,
but
we can definitely put this article there that kind of gives you the six different reasons that you might have a meeting and then how to write a desired outcome according to each of those different types.
Okay, perfect. I will definitely include that in the show notes. So any other, as far as we're talking, you know, at the beginning, we talked about just the big mistakes you see over again when it comes to meetings. Any other big one that sticks out?
Yes. So the other end of the meeting is how meetings end and what happens after the meeting. Mm. So if you think about a meeting as an event, which is how most people think about it, it's kind of like I go to this thing, it happens, and then it's over. And really, meetings are a cycle. There's a before, during, and after. And it doesn't matter if you're the meeting planner or you're a meeting participant. There are things that you should be doing before, during, after to avoid the common pitfall. So for example, with the purpose, you know, if you don't know what the meeting purpose is beforehand, if you don't know what that desired outcome is, it's really hard for you to decide if you should go to that meeting or not. And so this is what I was talking about with incorporations where people sit in a meeting and they're like, why am I in this meeting? Yet this is a good meeting. I get that this team is going to make a decision on something, but like I have nothing to do with this. So why am I here? Hmm. So if you don't know that purpose ahead of time, it's hard to make a decision about whether you should attend. So that's kind of like a different angle on the purpose thing. But for the meetings that you're talking about, my guess is that everyone's going to show up. It's not about inviting the wrong people to the meeting.
Right. It's sort of in our handbooks that these are the 10 or so people that need to be there and you should have it once a month. And so there are a lot of times where, you know, there may be the person who's over the youth in the church or sitting in this meeting and they're wondering, why am I here? But I'm part of the Word Council. I should be here, you know? And sure, there's more they could be proactive about and contribute to the discussion, regardless if it's about their auxiliary or not. But a lot of times it's the case. And so, but there are other meetings, I think, that individuals are invited that they really don't have to. But I think sometimes the leader, the bishop or stake president thinks, well, let's just get everybody in the room and we'll figure this out, when they don't take that step of thinking, well, who really needs to be here?
Yeah, there's a lot more about this in our book. And I think we've kind of gotten enough around purpose. So if you're really interested in this section, people can read the book and you'll see all kinds of good stuff on there on preparation and people. So again, the other problem comes kind of at the end of the meeting and going into the kind of after cycle. So at the end of a meeting, you should have some sort of record of the decisions and the next steps. And the kind of common thing I see is at the end of meeting, a phrase or something like, great, so it sounds like we made a decision, or okay, so I think we're all good on the next steps, without actually stating what the decision or the next steps are. And the grand, we should do this, or let's get on that, or somebody should really make sure that happens, without clarifying who the person is and when it's going to get done, and if it's a real next step or if it's just an idea. And that's a tenuous thing. And for example, I got a call from a colleague that I work with in the nonprofit sector who said, can you look at this document? Like, I really need to get this done and to my boss by this, you know, by this afternoon. And this was a Friday afternoon. And I was like, why? Why is this such a rush? And she was like, well, you were on the committee call this morning. Like, didn't you hear when he said that he wanted it? I was like, no. And she's like, so we ended up having a little conversation where her interpretation of his remarks were, I need this by the end of today because the project should not move forward without this first. And what I heard was, it would have been really nice if you guys had created this before the project, but given where you are now, it probably doesn't make sense to do it. So we had totally different interpretations of his remarks. And that led her to go and talk to him, thank goodness, and kind of get some clarity on it. But those kinds of misunderstandings come out of meetings all the time. Some people call it the he said, she said. So 2 weeks later, I thought we had decided to this. And someone else says, no, we agreed to that. And somebody else says, no, we'd agreed to something else. Hmm. If you don't have a record of the meeting, you end up rehashing old conversations. You end up having people working on next steps that aren't actual next steps, or working on the wrong next steps, or taking actions that are misaligned because of their misunderstanding of what the decision was. So you need to have a record that just clearly states, what are the decisions that were made? What are the action items and who's going to be responsible for them? And if you can, when they're going to be due, and any kind of highlights or critical information. We call them learnings, although they can be called anything you want, but some sort of capturing of either big insights, lessons learned, ideas for the future, key takeaways or critical numbers, anything that's like, if I missed this meeting, what would you want me to know? So it should not be a transcript, right? It should just be the key takeaways. And the nice thing about this is everybody now has it as a reference, including the people who didn't make it to the meeting. So somebody was sick or on vacation, or, you know, had to leave halfway through because they had an emergency, whatever it was that happened, if they missed the meeting, now they have all of the information that they need, the action items, the decisions, and those critical takeaways.
Gotcha. So it's not good enough to just say, yeah, at the end of the meeting, all right, this is what we're going to move forward with doing. But to break it down and say, here are the action items and who's attached to these action items, or what they look like in with specifics.
Exactly. And you don't have to do it like running a meeting can be a challenging role to, you know, do all the different things, engage the participants, make sure you're staying on track, pay attention to the time, take notes, right? I run a workshop called How to Run a Meeting Without Losing Your Mind, because it can be a lot to juggle if you're one person trying to do all of these things. Yeah. So one of the easiest things to offload is capturing notes. And you can do it in a couple different ways. So you could ask one person to be the note taker. Some organizations and groups find that to be an administrative role and people don't really like to do it. It can also be hard for some people to take notes at the same time as they're also contributing and participating. So they feel like they're unable to engage fully and participate in the meeting because they're so busy writing everything down. It doesn't have to be that way. You can develop the skill of note taking. And when you take notes by only capturing decisions, action items, and kind of critical takeaways, you don't have to be typing constantly or writing constantly. So it does allow you to have a more balanced participation. But regardless of whether you want to give it to one person or do it yourself, what I recommend to every team is to do a wrap up at the end. So if you're having a really long meeting, you would do it at the end of each section and say, okay, we finished the section on community engagement. What decisions did we make? And then have somebody, anyone in the group, can speak it out and say, we agreed to whatever the decision was, and write it down, type it up right then into a document, into an email, somewhere where it can be instantly captured and shared right after the meeting. So you can actually build the notes together in the last 5 minutes of that section of your meeting.
Gotcha.
And then by the end of the meeting, you've got to finish notes and you just hit send.
Yeah. Yeah. To show those that maybe weren't there or.
Yeah. And to everyone who even was there, because.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure.
People will forget, right? Even if you're there, you forget. And yeah. It's helpful to store them somewhere where everyone can access them. So a shared folder or a Dropbox or somewhere. But the reality is that most people still won't go to that place when they can't remember something. So having them in their inbox, which for most people is the place where they store lots of information and is searchable, that's the easiest way to keep it in front of people.
Yeah, I love that. And it sounds like, you know, if you don't, and we have what's called a ward clerk or a state clerk that are in these meetings, and they are more of an administrative person who should be taking notes or minutes of the meeting. But it sounds like even if that person's not there or there's not a clear person to do that, at the end of the meeting, as you wrap up, that person can then type these out as far as the roundup items, right? This is, what are the action items? What's our plan? What decision was made? And, you know, in just a few minutes, that email can be put together.
Exactly. And that person can get better as a note taker if they are doing a wrap up at the end. So they can be reporting out to either say, this is what I captured. These are the decisions I captured. These were the next action items I captured. And I didn't hear who was going to be doing these three things. So can somebody volunteer, or can you just remind me who said they were going to, you know, do whatever that next step is? So that person can do a report out and the group can just say, yes, 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 yes. Or that's not quite it. Can you adjust the record to state, you know, this corrected decision? And you'll also get a chance to help them improve their own meeting note-taking skills, because they'll start to learn better if you are helping them build the notes together. So they'll start to learn and be able to do it more easily to know kind of what are real action items and what were just ideas that were thrown around. And I definitely sit in meetings and I say, okay, this is actually a next step. Let's write this one down. Or I'm just throwing out ideas now. Here's some things we could do, and trying to articulate the difference so that as a group, it's easier for us to distinguish at the end, which are the things that are important.
Love it. I geek out about this stuff. So this is good that we're going over this. This is, I think, well needed, definitely needed information for leaders to hear. You use this term as far as meetings are a cycle. Are you referring to that the next meeting picks up where the one left off, or how would you articulate that further?
There's definitely some connectivity between meetings, and it depends greatly on the team, what you're meeting about, the frequency of your meetings. But for most groups, something coming out of meeting one is feeding into meeting two. So it might be that some of the next steps need to get accomplished in order for the next meeting to be productive. So coming out of meeting one, maybe it's, you know, gather more information on this, or, you know, move this material, you know, create a new version of this material and bring it back to the group, or, you know, whatever it could be. So there's some next step that has to happen. And then at the next meeting, you're kind of reflecting on that. Okay, we have this information. Now we can make our decision. Or here's the revised presentation. You know, are we good to go on this to send it to our client or to share it with the publisher or whatever it is? So there's often some sort of connection around next steps. The other kind of element is that this idea that they're a cycle kind of helps people get out of the idea of it being a single event. So meetings and tasks, kind of how you work in your daytime, there's an interplay that happens. So if you think about meetings as just being part of your flow, whether it's a flow from I'm working by myself to I'm working with others, or a flow of a project that kind of has different aspects to it. So sometimes we're in ideation mode, sometimes we're in execution mode, but most of work happens more like in streams or waves rather than these kind of isolated rocks that are just kind of stacked together. So even if there isn't a clear cycle, meaning that what's coming out of meeting one is directly feeding into meeting two, getting yourself into the mindset that meetings are a flow or a cycle rather than just a thing I go to for, you know, 6 to 9 p.m. at night helps you reframe how you kind of work through that meeting.
Yeah. And that's, and again, that, I think what you're saying there is that the last meeting doesn't necessarily determine what the next meeting's purpose is, but it should definitely, there's some follow-up items, right? And you want to touch base on those things, and, or there may be a new purpose that emerges from meeting one that is now the purpose of meeting two, right?
Right. There might be a topic that comes up that you say, oh, this is, we should definitely talk about this, but now is not the right time. This wasn't part of our original meeting plan, our original agenda. And so let's table the conversation. Let's put it on the agenda for next week or the next meeting, and we'll talk about it then. So it might be that an idea emerges that needs a conversation. It might be that something isn't working and you run out of time. And so you need to move that conversation into the next meeting because you're just not going to finish it today. So there are a lot of ways that it could flow over that aren't just about next steps.
Yeah, perfect. Anything else about this one specific topic that we should cover before we move on?
The only other thing I want to say about using meeting notes is that they are just like your next steps list. Like, it shouldn't just go into your inbox and then disappear forever. It should be something that you can refer back to. Because when you forget, because you don't remember what the decision was, or you don't remember what next steps were assigned to you, when you get the meeting notes in your inbox, take a look and see if there's anything that's important for you, either important information that you want to be able to access or next steps that you're responsible for, and put them onto your to-do list. But use your meeting notes as a reference material. I mean, even teams that take great notes, I've seen way too many of them never visit those notes again. And they're like, why do we take notes if we're never going to visit them? And I was like, yes, you should be visiting them. The answer is not to stop taking notes. The answer is to visit them so you can take advantage of all your good thinking. We actually had one client who, at the end of the year, they went back through all of their weekly team notes and they looked at the learning section only. They didn't look at the tasks or decisions. They just looked at the learning section. So they had 52 pages, but only like 3 or 4 bullets per page. So it didn't actually take them that long. And they emailed me afterwards and they said, we had so many good ideas in there. It was extremely helpful for us to plan out our next year's activities based on the learnings we had captured over our weekly meetings. And they actually changed their programming for the next year based on the learnings that they had captured, some of the ideas they wanted to experiment with, some of the actual lessons learned that they wanted to do differently the next time around. And I thought that was such a great practice because they were really able to use what they had, you know, ideated or use what they, the insights that they had generated to make a difference going forward. Because sometimes they're not exactly actionable right in the moment, right? You finish something and it's like, here's our lessons learned, but now we're not going to do this program again for 6 more months. So, you know, it's helpful. You write it down, but then you don't ever go back and look at it. And so 6 more months later, you repeat the exact same mistakes.
Yeah. And I would imagine there's some learnings that you may write down and it's nothing that can happen in the next week. It's maybe just like a general direction you want to take the organization. And so by reviewing back, not just the last meeting, but maybe 5 to 10 meetings before that, it sort of helps you keep in context all of these learnings you're having and making sure you're moving forward so that the learning section doesn't just look the same meeting after meeting, right?
Absolutely.
Nice. Now, I have a few just random questions here, but is there another section as far as kind of wrapping up when it comes to meetings? Obviously, people, we can't solve the world's problems of meetings in a podcast episode. That's why you wrote a book, right? So hopefully people go out and check that out and read that and really dive into this stuff. But what other, any other big topics that would be worth mentioning before I kind of fire some of these other questions at you?
This is less about the productivity of a meeting or the effectiveness, but we've talked a lot about what the meeting leader can do. And I want to just be clear that the success of the meeting is not solely up to the meeting leader. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the meeting has a responsibility to make the meeting productive. And the more that you can get people involved in that process and bought into the idea that we all have shared ownership over the meeting, the easier it is as a meeting leader to actually have a productive meeting. So don't let all of everything I'm saying just sit on your shoulders. And again, I said earlier that, you know, it can feel like a lot. You're trying to do so much as the meeting leader, and it can feel like I'm struggling because I'm all alone trying to make this happen. And it shouldn't be that way. You can engage your people and everyone can take on different responsibilities. Everybody can, you know, help keep time and pay attention to when the conversation goes off track and help build your notes. So everybody also then feels ownership and wants the meeting to be as successful. And that little flip in how people feel about their own participation also can make a huge difference in how engaged they are in the conversation and how they feel like they're a part of the team.
Yeah. So, because I felt that way a lot of times when I was a bishop, you know, I was obviously presiding over these ward council meetings. Everybody looked to me for, you know, I sort of set the tone and the beat of that meeting. But oftentimes I felt like, man, everybody's just showing up here out of obligation. They're willing, they're looking. And I really struggled with getting them involved and taking their own responsibility of the effectiveness of that meeting. Any hard and fast rules or tips that you would give to really engage those that are attending the meeting?
Well, there's kind of two different approaches. One is like the low-hanging fruit approach, which is kind of don't call anything out, just kind of introduce little practices here and there. So things like starting to use a wrap-up at the end, right? That's something as a meeting leader that you can do where you're now asking everybody else to help you figure out what were the next steps and what were the takeaways that you all discussed, or writing a desired outcome. Those are some little things that you can do by yourself that the team will then start to kind of become accustomed to and sort of slowly take ownership over those little things, right? Asking someone to help keep time where you're not making it a big deal. You're just like, hey, you know, would you mind helping me make sure that we finish this conversation at, you know, 9 o'clock so we can keep moving? Little things. The other approach, which I advocate if you feel like you can do, if you feel like you have relationships and the team would be open to this, I think it's a much stronger, like you can get much faster results with this approach, which is to address the issue of your meetings in a meeting. Mm. Have a portion of your meeting where the outcome of the meeting is to identify the areas of our meetings that we want to improve and or to paint a vision of the meetings that we want to be having and raise the issue with your team and say, hey guys, I'm feeling like our meetings are not as productive as they could be. And I'm wondering if anybody else is having that experience too. And you'd be surprised, or maybe not, how many people are like, yeah, I think our meetings could be a lot better. Yeah. And use everyone in the group to say, okay, so what parts of our meetings could be better? You can run a book club with our book. So we have a guide of how to use our book with your team. So you can have everybody read the book, or different people can read different chapters and then share it out with the group and say, okay, let's try this practice of pre-work. What would that look like if we did this? But raising the issue, people want to have good meetings. Nobody wants to sit through a really unproductive, boring, frustrating meeting. So just giving the team the opportunity to say, yeah, let's try some of these things. Let's experiment. Let's see what happens. Most of the time, people will be bought in. Of course, you have some people who get kind of stuck in their old ways and, you know, feel like, oh, this is extra work now. But most of the people are pretty happy to try some of these things.
I love that. You know, a lot of times that's the solution to a lot of problems is you just have to talk about it candidly and openly and just saying, you know, there's no bad ideas. How can we improve this meeting? And it's amazing that what can come out of that. I love that. Just a few things, you know, you talk about meetings. I forget the meme online is for like the worst meetings can make the greatest emails or something, whatever it is. But sometimes I've sit in meetings and it's just like this information download. And I sit there and think, why didn't you just send me an email, you know, so I could read this. Any tips on avoiding meetings that should really be emails?
Yes, we have a meeting flowchart that's also in our book. And it kind of walks you through step by step the questions you should be asking yourself in order to decide if a meeting is the right form of collaboration. And one of those steps is, could this outcome be achieved by another form of collaboration, like a shared document, an email, a dashboard, or a kind of chat, or an alternative kind of check-in? So I can kind of go through those and explain them a little bit more. So some meetings could be replaced by an email, right? I'm just sharing information out. Everybody needs to know this information. And part of the way to assess whether that's the case is by asking, is the information I'm sharing complicated or nuanced? Do I need to get buy-in from the people who I'm sharing this information with? Is this a high stakes kind of thing? Like, could this information be misinterpreted? Could people, you know, feel, you know, is it going to be emotionally charged when they read this? That kind of stuff. And if your answer is no, like, we're sending out a communication like the barbecue is moved from Monday to Tuesday, right? Like basic information. Mm-hmm. Or here's a report. These are where the numbers are at. This is where the fundraising plan is. This is where we are at against our goals. Like, that's pretty basic information. You might have a couple sentences explaining, you know, something that went wrong or here or there, but you don't need buy-in from people and they're not going to misinterpret it, or they're not going to, you know, it's not going to be highly emotionally charged. You don't need buy-in, like all those things. That's a good prime example of when an email or a dashboard would be a good solution.
Gotcha.
Another one is this shared document space. So this is where you want input on some material. Having a meeting to look at a document and kind of talk through it, or look at a presentation and talk through it, it's not always the best way to get input onto a material. And that's because when you're sitting with a group of five people, and you say you have an hour together. So assume the first 5 minutes are people showing up and the last 5 minutes are your wrap up. You have 50 minutes with five people. So that's 10 minutes per person to talk. So unless you need them to be hearing each other and kind of synapses firing as they're kind of dot connecting and ideating together and they're reacting to each other, if you're just asking them to reflect against the material, you now only get 10 minutes of somebody's brain share, but you're spending an hour of their time. That's not a good use of their time, and it's not productive for you because you're actually not getting what you need. It would be much better to just send the material by email and say, here's a document. Can you read through this and leave comments and ask questions and tell me where you're confused? And then maybe they'll still only spend 10 minutes, but at least they only spent 10 minutes and not 60. Or yeah, maybe they'll spend 15 minutes and you actually get a net gain for yourself because you got 15 minutes of their thinking and they got a net gain because they have 45 minutes of not being in a meeting. So there are lots of ways that you can collaborate outside of a meeting if you think about what's the outcome I need, and then is the meeting the best way to get to that outcome?
Nice, nice. I love that. And definitely, you mentioned a flow chart in your book that would be worth going through before each meeting, right?
Yes. And I think we also have an article about this. So I will send that to you as well.
Perfect. Cool. What about the individual in the meeting who sort of is more outspoken than others, that sort of monopolizes a lot of the discussion time? And sometimes I feel bad because sometimes I'm this person and I don't mean to be, you know, so dominating, but I just feel like, hey, here's a place that where we're supposed to share ideas and perspectives, and nobody else seems to be raising their hand. So I'm just going to go ahead. How do we manage as far as helping people speak up that aren't speaking up, and especially that person that's maybe dominating too much of the meeting?
Yeah. Well, first thing is to recognize most people don't realize that they're being overly controlling or dominating the conversation, or the opposite. They don't necessarily realize that they're not speaking up enough and that you actually want them to speak up. So it's easy to assume that people just have, you know, bad behaviors, but really that's not often intentional. And it's more likely either a result of kind of natural tendencies and personality traits of being introvert or extrovert, or it's a result of the atmosphere of the meeting. People not feeling comfortable for speaking up because of the authority in the room and they're nervous about having bad ideas, or people dominating the conversation because they're the boss and they're used to being the one who's talking all the time and they think that's what they're supposed to do, or no one else is speaking so they fill the air, right? It's about the environment of the meeting, not so much them. So there are a couple things you can do, and they kind of fall on a different spectrum. So one kind of simple way, which is without, again, calling any attention to the problem, you can just create space in your meeting to do private reflection time. And you ask everybody to write their ideas on paper, on sticky notes or on just on paper. And then you ask them to share either round robin style or put your sticky notes up on the board and cluster ideas. But you've now created time for quiet and thinking, which is really good for introverts who need that kind of quiet space to do their internal work. And also you've now kind of democratized the sharing experience because you're going to make everybody share their ideas round robin. So no one can hog the floor. And even if you don't end up doing a full round robin, at least now you have all the ideas on paper so you can collect them at the end. So even if you only have time to say, okay, everybody share your top two, you can still have everyone pass in all their ideas and collect, you know, the seven or eight that never got said and keep those for future reference. So that's kind of one practice. I would say on the other end of the spectrum is to use a practice that we call norms. And there's a whole chapter on norms in our book. And norms are the ground rules or expectations for how the conversation is going to run or how people should behave in the meeting. And there are all kinds of norms around process and preparation and communication and decision making. But one area of norms can be around the kind of speaking participation. So you could have a norm that says something like, speak up and be quiet. And this norm, when you introduce it, or you have to introduce the idea of norms, because you can't just say like, okay, guys, we're going to have this norm, and then it just happens. But you can introduce the concept of norms and say, I want to try running our meeting a little differently today. I want to try having three ground rules. And the first one's going to be speak up and be quiet. So for those of us who tend to speak a lot, we're going to try and be quiet today and check ourselves and be a little quieter and make room for other voices. And for those of us who tend to be more quiet, we're going to try and speak up today and kind of insert ourselves a little bit more in the conversation. And in order to help us all be successful at this norm, anyone in the room can raise their hand and say, I've noticed that so-and-so, who's typically, you know, quiet, hasn't spoken up yet. And today we're asking everyone to do their opposite. Or, oh, I've noticed that Mamie is speaking a lot today. And I'm wondering if this is an opportunity for her to be quiet. So you empower the group to help use the norm in the conversation by calling each other out. Now, some teams get super weirded out by this and they're like, oh, I could never do that. Like, you know, one in my group would ever call anybody out. So it's not for every, but for some groups, it's extremely powerful and they're very, very good at, you know, kind of saying, yeah, like we now have a goal. Like we're going to, you know, be quiet and we're going to speak up. And they're like, I want to do good. So people are like, I'm going to check myself a bunch and make sure I'm not doing the wrong thing this time. And they learn how to communicate with each other and give kind of feedback in a really positive way. And it's not like pointing fingers like, you're talking too much, you need to be quiet. It's like, I've noticed that Mamie is talking a lot. And it's great because she has great ideas. But today we said we're going to try and be quiet for those people who are allowed. So I'm wondering if Mamie can be quiet. And I can be like, oh, thank you for saying I have good ideas. And yeah, I can be quiet. Thank you for reminding me because I didn't notice myself.
Wow.
So you have to get there.
Yeah. And I love this term norms. And you mentioned it's a chapter in the book because a few years ago, I wrote an article on Leading LDS called The 7 Unbreakable Rules of a Meeting. And it's by far the most read post on Leading LDS and has the most comments. And there is a lot of opinion in these comments, and some people completely, absolutely disagreed with me. And I tried to explain to them, like I said, you know, it's okay if you disagree with my unbreakable rules of meeting, but the point being is that everybody needs to take some time and create some rules. But I think I like your term better, some norms of the meeting, because that structure really help stimulate the effectiveness of that meeting when you have some boundaries or some tactics and strategies you can reach towards when you just really need to get that meeting going, right?
Absolutely. But it's really important that you follow your norms. I've seen lots of teams say, we introduced norms and nothing happened. Yeah. Like, well, tell me what you did. And they're like, well, I said them at the beginning of the meeting. And, yeah. Right. And if you don't actually call them out, like if you say, you know, we want people to disagree with each other. We want to have healthy debate. That's one of our norms. So please, you know, speak up and play devil's advocate. And then nobody does it in the meeting. You can't say, well, that norm didn't work. You might need to have a time where you say, hey, I noticed one of our norms is to play devil's advocate and no one's done that yet. Maybe we could all do that right now. Or can somebody, you know, play devil's advocate for a minute, right? Like you have to actually activate your norms for them to make a difference. It's definitely helpful to have norms and just get people aligned on what's expected. But if people are consistently not following them or breaking your norms, then they're not really going to be taken seriously and they're not going to be as helpful. And one of the other ways that you can help make norms a little bit easier kind of when you're calling people out is to celebrate the success of your norms at the end. So if we go back to the example of kind of speak up or be quiet, at the end of the meeting, I might say something as the meeting leader, like, I want to call out Kurt and say that I think he did a fantastic job of being quiet in today's meeting. He's, you know, we all know Kurt tends to talk a lot. Yeah. And so I just want to acknowledge that he was a fantastic role model of our norms. Or, you know, I want to congratulate Kurt. I know we had to remind him a few times to be quiet, but I'm really proud of him. Like, you know, celebrate, call people out and say, like, you did a fantastic job with our norms, or we collectively did a great job. Like, great job, Kurt, for telling me that I was talking too much. Thank you for doing that. You helped me live our norms, and I appreciate that you took that on and spoke up. So, you know, you win the team player award for this meeting. Great job. Like, that kind of atmosphere of celebration at the end of the meeting also just helps people feel really good and reinforces that norms are important.
Nice. I love that. And really that, you can tie back that back to, you mentioned, you know, taking a meeting to address the issues of your meetings and, you know, to take a meeting to come up with some norms and brainstorm about some norms and set as a group together what those norms are going to be. And especially if a new bishop or management is put in place, you know, that could be meeting number one, that, all right, let's some norms for these meetings going forward and revisit these. Cause I'm sure as we discover different personalities in these meetings or different ways of doing things, that there may be some new norms that can be introduced, right?
Yes, you can brainstorm norms. It's really helpful when you have a transition of any kind. So a new leader or a change of your team members, those are great moments to kind of check with yourself and say, oh, let's reassess our meeting practices and then create some new norms. But even if you don't have the opportunity to do that, you can just do it at any meeting and say, you know, here's a practice on norms, or here's, you know, you can read a chapter on a book. I think we also have an article on norms I can share. And you can use the time together, as you said, to come up with your own norm. So we have a list that you can pick from, but you can also create your own. Norms can be anything and they should feel like you. So if be quiet and speak up doesn't feel like you, use different terms, right? Use things like step forward and step back. I've seen a team that uses that. Or, you know, speak up or be silent. I don't know, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It just has to feel like you as a group and everyone has to say like, yeah, let's try this.
Love that. Well, Mamie, there is, we could go on and on about these things. And that's why you wrote a book about this called Momentum, Creating Effective, Engaging, and Enjoyable Meetings. If people want to connect with you, obviously they can check out the book, but where else would you send them if they want to know more about you, about your research and the good work you're doing in the world of meetings?
Yeah. So you can learn about me at MamieKS.com. And Mamie is M-A-M-I-E. And you can follow me on Twitter and on Facebook at MamieKS. And you can learn more about Meteor and the work that we do working with teams and organizations at Meteor, M-E-E-T-E-O-R.com. And you can find our blog there. We send out a blog every week on meeting and collaboration best practices. So all good places. And we also, of course, have social media accounts for Meteor.
Awesome. Well, Mamie, the next time you get two Mormon missionaries knocking on your door, you can say, hey, I was on one of your podcasts and with your people. And, anyways, but that'll encourage them to talk and maybe you don't want that. So, but nonetheless, Mamie, thanks for being here and we'll be watching your work.
Thank you so much and good luck to you and all of your leaders. This is wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you, Mamie, for being a guest on the Leading LDS podcast. She was wonderful and so kind. And I love getting different perspectives, you know, outside of our LDS tradition that can bring great thought and inspiration to us that we can consider within how we lead the church. And so this is definitely a good example of that. Check out her book again, Momentum, Creating Effective, Engaging, and Enjoyable Meetings. I'll link to it in the show notes. And if you're reading a book or know of an influencer outside of the LDS church, you know, maybe they don't have an LDS background, but they talk about a concept or theme that would really bless the lives of leaders serving within the church, let me know. I'd be happy to reach out to them. We have an audience that's listening now that we can approach these people, and they're interested in talking to us because it's not just me and my mom listening, though my mom is listening. Thanks, Mom. So definitely contact me if you do know somebody at leadinglds.org/contact and shoot me a message. We'll go from there.
And don't forget, visit leadinglds.org/teach to check out the 3 most viewed sessions from the recent Teaching Saints Virtual Summit. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.